Good afternoon. It's Colin Heron from Greenwalden, BC, and with me today is...
I'm Preston Heron, Vice President of Greenwalden, BC.
And today we're going to continue to tell you what the builder knows. Today we're going to give you a little what we call a state of the industry. It's going to be nothing like the president's speech the other night. But I thought I'd just tell you what I've learned in the last little while. I went out to Vegas to the International Builders Show and the Kitchen and Bath Show, which is co-located out there. And I'm certainly not an economist or an expert in the field, but I certainly have 34 years of experience, and then I get to listen to a lot of experts. And I'm going to use a lot of round numbers here to move quickly and not decimal points or anything, because I'm not that much of an expert. But I just kind of want to give you order of magnitude of what I think is happening out there in the industry and what's coming. So the neat thing about the show is it's the largest show we had in 15 years. There was 117,000 people in attendance over the five days, I think it was, total. Notably, the attendees were younger, and there was a lot more energy there this year, which is kind of good because, frankly, the building industry is kind of older. There was hundreds of educational courses offered, and they were pretty neat. I took Cooper, one of our youngest guys there. Youngest is, I think he's 23 maybe, and he would walk the show a while and then do some educational courses. I think he took like five a day one day and whatever. And so I'm a life delegate there, and so I attended a lot of leadership meetings, and in those meetings we help shape the association, the future of the industry. But here's what I learned there, and Preston, when you have questions about it, you just jump in here. But I'm going to tell you the one big takeaway that I had when I put all the information together, and nobody said this, but this is my impression, and you remember this. Whatever you think you're paying for something, right? I'm talking housing. Whatever you think you're paying for something right now, you think it's ridiculous, buy it. It's overpriced today is what you're telling yourself. Buy it, and in 5 years, you're going to look like a smart investor. It is not going to get cheaper. Housing unaffordability is at an all-time high. Unaffordable, all-time high. People think that, oh, it's going to come down. I can tell you, my life, what I've lived and what I see in the charts, there's only one time in my life, 34 years of building, that the inflation was negative. That was in a 2009-2010 period. And the deflation was less than 1%, all right? On average, inflation is 3% or greater in our industry. And lately, it's been much, much greater. And the reality is, I believe that we're going to be experiencing, based on what they're telling me, at least a 6% increase in the cost of production of housing on every year. Inflation continues to go up. So, When I'm done telling you this, remember that first thing. Buy it today, even if it's overpriced, and you will think it's positive. So a lot of the things I heard. HMI, Housing Market Index, remains around 40, which builders are surveyed monthly. And every month they tell how favorable they think market conditions are to producing and selling housing. 100 is 100%, 40 is 40%. It remains in the 30s to the 40s. I think it was 48 last month. You go back 24 months in February 2022, it was 81. 81% of builders thought market conditions were favorable. So builders think conditions are not favorable. We are continually underhoused in America. We have, according to the president's statistics the other night, he said we're about 2 million behind, 2 million houses behind to house the people we have. Our long-term needs tell us that we're underproducing by about 300,000 units per year. So like last year we had 1,027,000 starts. These are residential units, 1,027,000. We need around 1.3 million based on the number of household formations we have, etc. And I'll come back to that. But by all agreements, we're somewhere between 2 to 3 million, but the president said 2, so I'm going to run with that. 2 million houses behind right now. In Michigan, let's dial it in a little closer. MSHDA, Michigan State Housing Development Authority, says that we are 190,000 houses behind. So everybody's heard about housing costing so much, and let's tell you why. We don't have the supply for the demand. The reality is, for some context, Michigan built about 15,000 homes last year. We're 190,000 homes behind, but we built about 15,000 homes. So we can't even catch up in 10 years at our current supply rate. And if you go back to 2005, we built 54,000 homes. So we're less than a third of our size. We have a shortage of 400,000 tradespeople in the construction industry. So the average age of those in our trade is, well, depending on the trade, is in the 50s, somewhere in the 50s.
And this is something we feel.
We feel it every day. Absolutely. Not that we don't like old people. We are old people. But the reality is we don't have a lot of young people coming into the trades, and it's been happening for a long time. The median age of a licensed builder in the state of Michigan is 59 years old. Median means half are older, half are younger. So I'm 50. I've been a builder for 34 years, and the reality is I'm still 9 years young compared to the median age of the builders. So in 3 years, 50% of our builders are eligible for Social Security. I mean, get a grip on.
Would you say like this is going to continually get worse until we have newer blood entering the system?
So yes, and right now they tell us there are more retirements per day than there are people coming in. So it's not, we're not going the right direction. Although I will tell you, in January, the job openings in construction moved lower. And I think that is a double-edged sword. But the reality is we have less people we are asking for less people because there is also less work on the horizon. The reason there's less work on the horizon is because the housing is unaffordable. It's unaffordable because all these cost increases and financing rate increases, et cetera. But at a time we need more, all of a sudden builders are thinking of slowing down because it's harder to build right now. So that's bad. Inflation. So inflation, I think, is going to persist at 6%. And when I say I'm repeating things that specialists like Dr. Dietz, who is our chief economist at National Association of Home Builders, him and his entire economy team puts this together. Real smart people. I'm just repeating the facts that they stated to me. And I think he said 5.8 or something. I'm saying 6%. That tells you how I'm kind of doing some rounding. Housing inputs, our costs are rising consistently with no end in sight. So I think you could look back, me and you could look back over the last few years and say, we're sick into the money we pay for all of our materials and blah, blah, blah. And that is an input. And so there's no way we're going to be producing it cheaper tomorrow than we were today.
Yeah.
And that's on the national average when I watch those all the time. The bright spot actually is lumber. Lumber is actually not an all-time low, but it's near a low. We're flirting with $380 to $400 per thousand right now. But if you look at the futures market, it's in the 540 to 560 market. So the lumber producers and they're thinking that they won't be able to keep up when the demand gets pulled back to us.
So we have these clients, you know, let's say Susie calls me and she says, you know, I've been really thinking about building this house, and but I'm thinking about waiting a couple of years to save more money to put toward this new house because you just budgeted me $500,000 and I want to save toward it. What would you advise them?
I would tell you that unless your savings rate is greater than 10% of the cost of the house per year, you're not going to catch up. Like it's probably like if you're only saving, you know, 3% of the cost of the house per year, it's going to cost you more as you go down the road. I mean, I'm literally telling people right now that if it's not going to go up 10% per year, I'll be shocked. I mean, because if our inputs are going up 6% per year, I just don't see it. So lumber's low, and that's the headline. A lot of people see the headline as low, lumber's low. But I think you need to realize we have a lot of structural issues there. We're low because building is low. If building ramps back up, lumber goes up with it. I mean, we're down, I don't know, 40% from where the lumber was two years ago when things are rolling. So that's going to happen. The forecast is building starts hold pretty low through here till the 2025. They don't see anything. They see the economy slowing a little bit in the early 2025. And then the big thing is they see interest rates getting back into the fives in 2025. Dropping. That was their big thing. In the fives by 2025. Well, what do you think is going to happen when the interest rates drop to 5%? Everybody who's on the sidelines who needs a house, that makes a larger difference in the cost of a house than our inputs do a lot of times, because interest is one of the largest factors in the cost of the house. So the existing supply, when all those buyers come online, the existing supply is going to ramp up. I mean, the cost of the existing supply is going to ramp up. So I think there's going to be more increased pressure. I mean, I talked to a guy in Chicago while I was there, and I said, he only does new houses. And I said, how's it going? He said, it's great. There's no houses for sale. Everybody has to buy a new house. I mean, so that's the reality. Not that he was like happy about that, but that's the reality. He's like, I sell lots of houses. Multifamily is going to slow dramatically, was it? And remodeling was going to be flat with a possible decline in the near future for maybe about a year, which remodeling's been the bright spot. people stayed where they were and they've just been remodeling. So that's going to be interesting. I learned that when NHB met with Fed Chair Powell and the whole FOC board, that housing was they advised him housing's getting hurt by this interest rate environment. And pretty much what they told him was the entire economy is being hurt by it intentionally. And we can't fix your problems without hurting the economy. So we're going to sacrifice your industry for the purpose of the whole economy, getting it back on track and stopping this inflation. And you have so many structural issues in your industry that this rate alone won't do it. And if we drop the rates, it's off to the races and inflation is going to occur in yours. And that's what we don't want. So they're going to meet again in May. An economist will meet again in May, and they're writing white papers to advise them of what they think is best and whatnot. But anyway, it's neat to know that there are people advocating for affordable housing. And really, I coined a new phrase there, and I got made fun of it. I said to the NHB people, you folks aren't really doing anything great for us. You're just making things that are bad less worse. You know, that's really what they're doing. They're trying to make it less worse right now. The other night, the president said he had a few ideas in his State of the Union speech to stimulate first-time home buyers and people that are setting on starter homes to sell them. Well, that's great. It'll gig the market a little bit. It'll get those houses moving. But the reality is it doesn't fix the supply problem, and that's what we really have. We have a supply problem. So if you just incentivize people to move, you're going to probably raise the price of houses again. Unfortunately, it's an unintended consequence of throwing money at the market. On the national average, the cost of a house is $430,000. And according to our research, $93,000 of that is in regulatory costs on the local, state, and national level. So we're telling the president who wants things done, or our governor who says build, baby, build. We agree with you. We're glad that it's on top of your radar. But let's stop doing regulatory actions that increase the cost of the house. Let's start figuring out how we can lower the cost of the house on regulatory, because say we cut that in half, that could be a big difference. For instance, we're fixing to update our code in 2024, our building code in Michigan. And that building code is required to be updated. It's on a 3-year cycle. It's required to be updated every 6. We didn't do it the last time. We're supposed to do it now. Long story short, that the research we've done on that code says the average price of the house in Michigan is going to go up $20,000 per house beginning next year when this code would take effect. By executive order, or actually I think it was administrative rules, in March they added an emergency electrical disconnect on every house. I don't even know if you heard about this yet. So every new house is going to have an emergency electrical disconnect, so a fireman, policeman, whoever can run up and turn the power off to your house, because they're having so many issues where during emergencies they can't. Now that added about $800 to the cost of the house, which doesn't sound like a lot, but every time you turn around, we're adding something to the cost of the house and we're not making it cheaper, which is just pricing more and more people out. So anyway, that's our stance on that is let's try not to add more to the cost of the house. The neat trends that I heard about out there was on average, houses are getting smaller. They think that is largely a decline because affordability. So, you know, they're trying to push out more and more smaller houses. And I say small, they're not that house. The average square foot of a new house is 2,419 square foot, and the median is closer to 2,200. Home size rose from 2009 to 2015 because no one in the starter market was building at that time. And then once 15 occurred, they started building more starters, and that. So it's not that all houses are getting smaller, but when you're talking about averages, that's part of it. And then the affordability issue is causing people to build a few hundred square foot less as well. You know, one less room because I can't afford it, whatever. But here's one of the interesting things that I thought. We have a large demographic of prime house buying age persons right now. People between the age of 25 and 45 do most of their home buying and home moving, most of them. And I think they said there was 7, and don't quote me on that, but I think it was 7 moves in the average lifetime. And a lot of that is because you have your kids, you raise your families, you get a new job, you're doing a little better, you got a third kid, you buy a house with 4 bedrooms, whatever. So that's when your moving occurs. And we have the largest demographic in that period that we've had in the history of America by their reports. So if you look at the fact that we have a tight house economy, you know, not very much supply, and then all these people, it's like, well, you know, you're going to have pressure on the pricing. One statistic was that 19.1% of young adults between the age of 25 and 34 are living with their parents. And that is a strong number. In Michigan, it's between, depending on the locality, between 15 to 20%. So you literally have nearly a quarter of the young adults who should be buying houses living with parents, hoping for that house. So you have not only do you got a bunch of people that want to upgrade, you have people that aren't even housed. that hurts economies. That hurts economies for a lot of reasons. But if you don't have good housing in your area, you can't take the job there because you can't afford it, you know. So local markets really need to think about how to not zone us out, but zone us in. And part of it is this, these people living has made young people living with their parents has people thinking about multi-generational living arrangements, which is kind of a cultural arrangement. Some families and some cultures do it more than us Americans generally did. But as we change, we might find that needs to come back more. And then we also need to change some zoning in localities because a lot of localities don't allow that. So interesting there. But here's some statistics that I think that I wrote here. Why do we want you owning a house? Why, Preston, tell me why you think people would want to own a house other than to live there.
Asset. Like, I think it's one of your biggest investments in life. You know, it's a good way to invest money and have something instead of just paying for rent that just vaporizes.
So did you read my notes or something? Because my number one line is home buyers build wealth faster than renters. Home buyers build wealth faster than renters. So for the stability of a family and community, it's good to own a home. Now, it's expensive to own a home, and it's arguably very expensive right now, but yes, it is. Now, the interesting thing, though, is of those 1.027 million units, 10% of those were built for rent this last year. So people are in large droves moving into new houses in new subdivisions, but they don't own them. So that's great for the investors, but it's not so great for people because that's not growing their balance sheet.
And I know we've talked about this, and you wonder our trend. Maybe, you know, you've got these statistics now, what these numbers look like right now. And if that trend kept growing, and let's say the primary holder of the money in these assets, let's say the baby boomers, you know, they're 60, 70 years old, and they're, let's say, retiring out or moving out of this market. And now you've got this younger generation coming in. So, you know, what's your thought on the future if this trend keeps happening where, like, the younger people, maybe it's not all about money. Maybe it's they don't want that responsibility of owning this home and putting this roof and these windows and these doors on it. And the younger generation's like, I just might want to rent somewhere. So where do you think the shift, do you think that shift will follow?
I'm not so sure that isn't a good part of it, right? You know, a lot of those people have grown up, haven't been the people taking care of it. And their parents, thankfully, have had enough money for the first time in America that they've hired a lot of those services instead of doing it yourselfers. So I'm not sure they're trained for it, just like people don't shovel their own sidewalks, they don't mow their own yard, whatever. So I don't think you're wrong. But the statistics tell you that 66% of Americans own their home and they're wealthier than the people that rent. So not saying that you have to be wealthy to be happy, but as you get older, it's a huge part of your balance sheet. So just to run through some of those, homes are on average 26% of the household balance sheet. Retirement accounts account for only 15%. So your home is often a larger asset than your retirement accounts. Stocks in average family is only less than 1%, 0.8%. Business interests account for 20%, vehicles 6%, other residential real estate, which I read into probably second homes, account for 6%, and then all other assets, 19%. So it's a clear winner. It's above all their other assets. It's above if you own a business. It's above if you own retirement accounts.
So those numbers are telling me, like, if you're sitting on the fence and you're 25 years old and you tell yourself, what should I invest in? Because you just heard the stats. You just heard that we have this housing shortage and the cost of houses are going up, and you want to know, should I invest in a home? If you read through those numbers, what would you do?
I would buy, but I also would tell you, because I'm like no Dave Ramsey or anything, you buy what you can afford, not what you want. Because if you buy something you can't afford and you don't take care of it, then you're going to be in trouble. Right. So if you don't service your debt service properly, if you don't maintain the home properly, if you don't have emergency fund for those days when the furnace doesn't work and the roof drips or whatever. So, you know, I think it's a lesson in buying what you can afford is going to long term be good for you. And I think that's why, statistically speaking, people buy and move and buy and move as their career progresses, as their kids progress. You know, you're not always happy with your first one, and that's probably okay. Because if you go for that forever house, you probably...
out of reach.
Right, probably out of reach. And if you can reach it, it probably takes so much of your income that it's probably not good for your family.
That stress level balance would not be good.
Right.
Yep.
So we want you to buy a house, and we want you to build a house or buy a house. But the reality is the people that were telling us 25, we don't service many of those clients. So after we've been around an awful long time, we tend to do the move up or the last time home buyers, the people that know what service is like and they want it and they want really nice amenities. And we tend to build those. But every time we build one of those multi-million dollar homes that is for somebody who's the last time or the move up or they became the executive, that frees up a starter home or a next level home. So, you know, like you talked about the boomers live in a lot of nice houses. As they move to assisted livings or as they move and get rid of their second home or as they move to, you know, apartment living or just different lifestyles that they might choose, those are what frees up some houses for them. So I think the interesting challenge for us will be those boomers are also unfortunately at the age where the older part of them is dying off. And when they die off, they leave assets and those assets are transferring people my age and younger, Generation
Largest
Xers.
Largest generational wealth flux.
Right. There's going to be a huge. And so what the next generation wants when they actually have money might change compared to what the generation wants right today, right? So I think when you look at all those things, back to my original statement, because I don't want to make this one a long one, I think you overpay today and you'll be happy tomorrow. If you, I mean, yes, location, 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 but I think you got to buy it, right? You don't want to buy something that's going to be a money pit. You don't want to buy something you can't afford. You don't, you know, all those reasons. But I truly believe that if somebody says they can't afford it today, you might as well put it out of your long-term plan. Or rearrange your plan because I don't see it. And unfortunately, you've got kids that are young and you've got a long ways to go. I've got five kids, two of them own houses and the rest, three of them own houses and the other two still in apartments. I worry for them. I mean, I do because I think it's terrible how expensive it is. And I worry for myself, for God's sakes, you know. But thankfully, I have a house already and my house is in good shape. So I think that you probably should stretch. You probably don't need the new car, even though it's really nice and shiny. But the reality is car debt loans are going up right now. Student loan debt actually started coming down fourth quarter of 2023. I don't know if that had to do with forgiveness or not.
It's a depreciating asset.
Cars are depreciating assets and houses are appreciating assets. So it's good. It's good to build.
So reach. If you had something to reach for the housing market.
Right. But remember, high prices are the cure for high prices. So there's opportunity in this market. There's opportunity for investors. There's opportunity for work people. If you're listening to this, you're an entrepreneur and you want to go to work, this is a good place to work. I don't care if you want to plumb, drywall, paint, floor. If you want to go to work, this is a great place to work. And I'm looking at the reality that we are underhoused and we're probably not going to get there in the next 10 years. We need to start chipping away at it. But there's going to be a long, steady amount of work. The only drawback to that is, can we find a way to do it affordable? Number one. And can the economy stay in good enough shape where people can't afford what they need, right? So, you know, there's always these questions. But, yeah, that's what I learned out there. I will say there was more excitement there than I've seen in a lot of years. I've been going there, I don't know, like 25 years or better. And the interesting thing is all the international booths that were there at this show. And that I was like, why is, like, you know, Venezuela selling blah, 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 countertops? And the CEO commented, he said, we are the best, strongest housing market that the world sees. Like, they see the need. And so even international companies are trying to get a piece. They're trying to get a piece of the pie. So if you're sitting here in Michigan saying, geez, what should I do with myself? There are people transporting stuff across the sea to come here. You could go to work today in Michigan and a job that's probably pretty darn stable, pays probably better than a lot of college graduates, and it's pretty darn rewarding. I mean, there's down days. Everybody has down days. But anyway, that's the news from there, is that I think the industry's strong, going to be stronger. Affordability is the number one problem that I see coming forward. So with that, I'm Colin from Greenwald in BC.
I'm Preston. Appreciate Colin going to the show. All this information we can take, use, learn, apply to our business every day.
Absolutely. So have a great day. Appreciate your time.
Thanks. Bye.